Hi, you're listening to Petri.com's MJF Chat Show. I am Mary Jo Foley, aka your Petri.com community magnet. And I'm here to interview industry experts about various topics that you, our readers and listeners, want to know about. So today's MJF Chat is all about keeping up with Windows patches in your enterprise. And my guest is Brian Dam, software engineer at Recast Software, and the force of nature behind the Damn Good Admin blog. Thanks for joining me, Brian.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's absolutely my pleasure.
Especially thanks because I know you just emerged from a disconnected vacation in the woods.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And, you know, that kind of made me wonder, isn't there some kind of metaphor involving emerging from the woods and cutting through the underbrush of patch management?
I don't know if it takes a similar mind, but let me tell you, doing patch management definitely makes you want to go run into the woods every once in a while.
I can believe that. Especially.
But don't worry, I came back just in time for Patch Tuesday. I made sure I was back.
Yep. Rested, ready, and all set for Patch Tuesday.
You got it.
Yep.
Or B-Week.
So, I know, B-Week. Yeah, we're going to talk about B-Week and C-Week. In fact, that's actually where I wanted to start.
Okay.
So I was thinking, you know, the nomenclature of patches is part of, I think, what makes it so feel so complicated and makes it so complicated for many people. So now that SACT has been sacked, as you put in one of your blog posts recently, how do we keep up with all these ever-changing names? There's things like B-Week, C-Week, LTSC, SAC, blah, blah, blah. How do you yourself try to keep up with all this?
Oh, man. It's kind of frustrating, to say the least. And I get that frustration from people that are asking me questions, right? And so it's, how do you keep up with it? The Patch Tuesday still is a thing. I guess that's that's what we're all used to. We're like, oh, we all know that on the second Tuesday of the month at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, I want to say, which is to say in Redmond, that's when patches are released. And that's, we're just so used to that. We've kind of almost been lulled into, let's say, a false sense of security that's what patching is. Mm-hmm. And that was really always for security patches, right? And there was a reason for doing that we could talk a whole hour about why they chose to do that, but they did. And whether you agree with it or not, it's kind of slightly irrelevant. But the point is that's what we all sort of thought, that, oh, it's just, okay, we know exactly when patches are released. And Microsoft always kind of said, well, that's just our security patches. They never really committed to that being the only time that they release patches. But in a practical manner, they really didn't break that rule. And then they really, really kind of I won't say break the rule, but I think people are now waking up to the fact that, oh, okay, patches aren't only being released on Patch Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But I really think that monthly cadence still works, right? It is still true that security updates are released, I won't say exclusively, but that's what they're targeting. They're targeting Patch Tuesday is when security updates are released. And so I still think despite everything else that they've changed, you can still viably have a monthly patch cycle if that's what works for your organization. Now, again,
that's B-Week, right? Is that what they call
B-Week?
B-Week,
yes. That is B. So, I mean, if people are confused, the thing to understand is that still is true. And part of the things that are confusing about that is they've done some good work, which is they've created these nice pages that list the builds, right? Because now with Windows 10 and even Windows 7, now that they've gone to the fully cumulative update model, it's really about a build, right? This is just a build that they put out. And the confusing part right now is that they're putting out builds not once a month, right? They're putting builds out two, maybe three times a month. And the website that you can go to that lists all the builds for a particular version of Windows 10, right, whether it's 1809 or 1803 or 1709, whatever it is, that you're seeing builds on this website more frequently than once a month, and that's kind of freaking people out. And that's where the B, C, and D week come in. So the B week and the C week and the D week, those are just those are just the weeks that Microsoft will try and target a release. But the thing I want people to come away with is targeting week B, which is Patch Tuesday, and doing a monthly cycle is as valid as it's, as I would say it's ever been. Mm-hmm. The upside is that they're releasing on the other weeks, they will release quality updates. So if you have a known issue, right, if you're experiencing a known issue, and I don't know if you want to talk an hour about patch quality, but we could talk.
I was going to ask you that as the opener, but I'm like, that's too cruel to ask that.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about patch quality. But those other weeks, do you have to push those out? And I would say no, but it's useful to know that they're there. And again, the nice part about having that these websites is they are doing a better job of being a little more transparent about, hey, yeah, we have this problem. It's a known issue. And if you have a known issue, then there's a chance, the smallest chance that they might actually fix it in the next non-security release. And so maybe you do want to deploy that, but maybe not. Right. And so there's just a difficult it's difficult to know what to do with those things, and it's kind of freaked people out. But again,
I like your point though, that the North Star of Patch Tuesday is still there. And I think some people have forgotten that because now it feels like we get patches every day.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's exactly that. And even some of the, when I look into it, if you look at some of the release dates for some of the non-Windows OS apps, Office 365, they're releasing patches entirely outside of that cycle.
They are.
And that's fine. Like, in that's where the organization, you have to look at your organization and say, okay, well, does the monthly cycle still make sense? And I think for most people, the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. But what I tell people is if you're not doing testing, right, if you're not doing any patch testing other than, well, we just push it out and see what happens, it takes as much time to do zero testing four times, a month, or five times as it does once a month. So if you're just kind of spraying and praying anyways, then maybe sure, go for a weekly cycle if that makes sense for you. Mm-hmm. I just don't think the majority of people that makes sense for. And so in which case, stick with the monthly. If that means it's a patch guy, you don't like to say, well, wait a week before you push a patch out. But Patch Tuesday is still when the very important security stuff comes out. Yes, the only caveat to that is when they do an out-of-band release. And I'm okay not automating or planning for that, right? It's rare. It happens. Mm-hmm. And usually there's a big stink made about it. I mean, unless you are completely disconnected from the internet, like, you are going to know somehow that something has gone horribly wrong. and you need to do something about it.
Exactly.
And even then, one of my previous organizations, that came out, and we went to the security team and said, okay, Microsoft put out this out of band patch, and it looks bad. And they looked at it, and they were reasonable about it. They said, well, they looked at what the vulnerability was, and said, yeah, we're not too worried about that. We don't have that particular problem. We don't use, or we have another way of mitigating it. And so we're actually okay not just pushing what we call the big red button, which said, just shoot. Who cares about testing, right? So I'm fine still thinking of Patch Tuesday, like you said, is the North Star, and stick with it.
Okay, cool. So we have a related question from one of our readers, Blood. And he's asking about
preview. That's an ominous name.
Blood. Preview updates. So I think this is one of those other weeks, like D week, maybe, or maybe it's not that. But here's his question. He said, a lot of people decline these preview updates as they're intended for further testing. However, when synchronized with WSUS, they are automatically approved. There are third-party tools to deal with this, he says, but considering it's such important technology, it would be great if there was an automated way to deal with it within WSUS itself. Is there a solution to this, Brian?
Oh, so this is one of the questions you want to ask?
Yeah.
Questions back up. So one thing to talk about the preview, right? So you mentioned preview, and I want to talk about that because it actually pertains to the last question, which is with Windows 7, when they went to the cumulative update model, the mm-hmm. updates themselves were labeled preview, right? So the non-B right. release, the non-patch Tuesday, they were named preview of monthly quality updates. I forget exactly what the, mm-hmm. but it was right there in the title. And you just knew this was a preview update. And that's part of what, when people started moving to Windows 10, they don't do that, right? Mm-hmm. The non-B week updates, it makes me want to go check right now, but I'm 99% sure. I'm going to be wrong, but I'm 99% sure that they're just labeled whatever. There's no preview moniker. Are.
Yeah.
And that was part of the confusion, because people were used to, hey, we saw these Windows 7, they're called preview. Now I'm Windows 10. Wait a minute, where's the preview? I'm just seeing these other updates. So mm-hmm. That word preview was part of the problem, because people got used to it seeing in Windows 7, and then it was mm-hmm. gone in Windows 10. I'm not so now to get to the question as a whole. Yep. I'm not aware that WSUS would automatically approve preview updates. Okay. I think what he means is that you can have automated approval rules, mm-hmm. but they're basic. They're not. A lot of my experience recently is with Config Manager, and you get very, very granular with mm-hmm. what kind of software updates you can choose to release, as where in WSUS or WSUS, however you want to pronounce it, it's less granular. And I think what he's saying here is that it doesn't give us the ability to exclude these mm-hmm. non-security released. That's an interesting question. I actually have a script, and it's on my blog, that I think maybe he's talking about, but okay. you can proactively decline them. So if you decline an update before you see this, remember how we talked about, I want like 10 seconds to think of my answer.
Yeah,
this is actually one of those. I'm thinking through. Yeah. Cause there's not a great solution to it, cause he's right. And I don't know of a great thing to do proactively to say, hey, how do we not ever approve these? Because the way that WSUS works, which is I do the sync and then that kicks off the automated approval rules. I'd want to go back and look and see if there's any time in between there where you could, what you would try and do is proactively decline those and get those updates declined before mm-hmm. the automated approval rules run. And I just don't remember off the top of my head if you can, how tied together those are in WSUS. Yeah. But yeah, he's right. It's not a great.
Yeah. Well, if you do have something, you can always add them to the notes and have a thing saying here there is a solution and here it is. But it sounds like it's not really built that way.
I mean, this is where I could talk a long time for WSUS. WSUS is the architecture. WSUS is like this foundational technology that was architected, way back in early 2000, like three or so, right? Like the thing we're dealing with right now, the architecture. And the last time anybody really, in my opinion, and I want to be clear, I'm not an MVP. I don't have any inside baseball on this. I'm just, from my external experience, nobody's done anything meaningful with WSUS since 3.0, I think, Service Pack 2, which was, architected back in 2003, 2000 and later. Yep. Like the base architecture hasn't been touched. And I think this is one of those things where, when somebody put this thing together, nobody thought, hey, in 10, 15 years, we might have these preview updates that we might want to not do.
Yep. Because things have changed, right? Like the way patches were originally conceived is so different now from how patches are handled.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And the cumulative update model was a huge change for that and created a lot of, right out of the bat, I was a huge fan of the cumulative update model. It's like, yes, this is what everyone else does. And I'm a huge fan of it, in part for political reasons, because it gave me the opportunity to say, listen, we install a patch and I don't have a choice, right? Microsoft, right. I don't have a choice as a system administrator whether to choose this patch or not choose this patch. If I don't, mm-hmm. if you tell me your application has a problem and I can't install this patch, what that means is we can never, ever install patches again, because next mm-hmm. month's going to have the same thing.
Yep.
and that's a powerful political tool. And I hate having to say that, like that you need a political tool.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like admins, it's not just doing the tech work that's part of your job. It's the political work too, right?
Exactly. And what really worked for me at my when they mentioned that the first time, the first thing I did within was go to security and talk about this mm-hmm. and explain, okay, if they go, if Microsoft is really, if they're going to do this, if we're going to go to the cumulative update model, these are the things I think it means. And what it means is we can't really uninstall. If we uninstall a patch, it means we uninstall all the patches.
Right.
And we're not even sure if the uninstall will work. And so they, and I'm like, and if we don't do a patch, then we can't do next month's patch because mm-hmm. it's cumulative and that's how it works. And so I got security on my side and that was a huge win. And yeah, we did have times when a patch, again, going back to patch quality, a patch created a problem with an app. And we had a discussion like, well, security said you have a month. I'll give you 1 month and you need to figure this out mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I can't have that system vulnerable.
Right.
And so it was beautiful. I was out of the discussion, right? It's not me.
Yep.
It's right. Like, hey, no, you talk to security. I don't, if security is okay with not passing that box, great. I want that in writing and I'm going to print that out and I'm going to put it in a folder.
Next right? time but, something happens.
Yeah. When something happens, I'm going to pull that out and say, hey, you said we're not going to ever patch that box again until they fix their problem. Mm-hmm. That made so many conversations go away of like, well, can we just do this? Like, nope, we can't. Yep. You can fix your problem or we cannot patch. Those are the binary choices.
Yep. I'm going to give you another reader question.
Sure.
This is looking for some advice from Greg Alto says, does Brian have a recommendation for remote monitoring of client systems for patches? Here's my scenario. I maintain a lot of SMB PCs remotely and visit on site when needed. Do you have any recommendation besides WSUS?
Yeah, so here again, we go with you know, WSUS wasn't thinking of an organization where 90% of your people are using laptops, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe working from home. So I'm 100% work from home. I never join, I almost never go to the office. And so how do you deal with that? Especially as a small business. Yeah, you mentioned monitoring. So the monitoring is sort of the knife in my back on that one, because what I would tell you is like the simplest thing to do is just use Windows Update, right? Don't use WSUS. Mm-hmm. Take those, that subset of devices and say, well, just point them at Windows Update, but you lose reporting, right? So he specifically asked about, well, you know, how would you monitor this? You could apply patches by just using group policy and say, well, point at Windows Update, but that's the spray, pray, and don't really validate method, and that's not great. And so there are other options outside of WSUS. And the one that I'd like to start with in these kind of conversations is look at an always on VPN. So historically, VPN has been the solution for on-prem in this. Well, you're out of the network, so use a VPN to get on the network. The problem there is that was usually tied to, well, they need access to a folder, right, or a file share somewhere. And so when they need something, they're going to connect to the VPN. And maybe if we get lucky, there's enough connection time for some of the scans and all the software update stuff happening. But now that we've moved, you know, to OneDrive and other solutions where there's less and less a reliance on VPN, people just don't. A user isn't of their own accord going to say, hey, I'm going to connect to the VPN, put in my password and do all that stuff. And so that's where, so that stopped kind of working for people. It's like, hey, I have people, they have VPN, but unless they actually go and take action, nothing's happening. And that's a problem. And that's where always on VPN comes in. Now that's, when I say always on VPN, that's also now a sort of branded Microsoft solution. Mm-hmm. I'm talking in the more generic thing. If you have a VPN solution or you don't, get one. And consider, do they have an always on option where it's just, if that machine is running and connected to the internet, it will automatically create a connection into your environment. So that I think is the simplest thing. And the reason I like that solution and why I tend to start with it is because you probably have some other stuff that's not just patching that would also benefit from having that connectivity, whether it's some sort of remote support tool, whether it's some third party antivirus software or whatever, or some other security tool where you need connectivity to the box. If you do an always on VPN, you solve your patching problem and you possibly solve a whole bunch of other stuff. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, the other two is the big one for me is Intune. I mean, I think that's where Intune to me is like the perfect small business solution. Like, and it's really been marketed. The feeling I get from the marketing is, you know, I want huge enterprise. You know, Microsoft thinks huge enterprise should all go to Intune. And my first gig as a system administrator was at a very small shop. It was 150 people at two different offices in two different states. The minute Intune was a thing, I would have went there because I had nothing else, right? That's where I cut my teeth. That's why I set up WSUS and all these other things. Mm-hmm. But his exact problem of how do I deal with remote users, there was no good solution. There was no cloud back in 2000. Well, I shouldn't say that. That's not true. The whole Intune and cloud-based management for sure wasn't a thing back in 2005, but it is now, right? And so if you're a small business and you're using, especially if you're using Office 365 or, you know, whether you want to call it EMS or the M365 stack or whatever, mm-hmm. I would seriously look at Intune. If you're a small business, I would absolutely look at Intune for doing your management. I think it's almost purpose built for small businesses, small and medium businesses, because it's a matter of it's just enough administration, right? And you don't have any infrastructure. That's the problem with the small business, right? It's like, well, I can set up WSUS because that, in theory, that doesn't take a lot. But setting up something like Config Manager, which is near to my heart, doesn't make sense to me in small businesses, mm-hmm. right? The amount of infrastructure and experience and just, it's a big chunk of infrastructure for a small business. So I think that's really where Intune shines. So those are my three options. Windows updates, if you don't care about reporting, but he very specifically said, I care about reporting. So mm-hmm. always on VPN, if you can swing it. And other than that, I think really Intune, I think that's where Intune comes in.
Nice, okay. I don't know if you heard this while you were out in the woods avoiding bears, but 19H2 is coming and it's going to be act basically like a cumulative update for people who are already on 19.03 and will be a minor update for everyone else.
So I have not heard that.
What's your take on that? Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. So that's, yep. They're not going to call it a service pack, are they?
No, they're not going to call it a service pack, but it's going
to
work.
Would you like to spitball why they're not going to do that?
I believe they want to continue to call these feature updates. And in fact, it will have some features, but I keep hearing the features will be turned off by default. Okay. And so if you want some of the new features that are in 19H2 when it comes out in the fall, you will be turning those features on as an admin.
That's good. Okay. Well, so that's good. That's good news. My quick aside on the service pack thing is because that extends the support. If you release it right according to Microsoft,
right.
if they release a service pack, then it extends the support lifecycle, and they don't want to do that.
And
more.
if it is a cumulative update, I haven't gotten this part clarified yet. But if it is a cumulative update, you can't defer it forever, right?
Correct.
I think you have maybe 30 days.
If you're using Windows updates. Or Intune, correct. I think I want to say 30 in Intune
35.
or Windows Update for Business. I think it's 35 exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now that you've heard the big news, we don't know if this is a forever thing or just a one-time reprieve. We don't know, and they haven't really said. So my question to you is, do you think this would be a good thing if it became the new normal? If the H2 updates are basically service packs, though they won't call them service packs, do you think that's a good way to go? Or do you think that admins really just have to suck it up and start figuring out that feature updates are coming twice a year and you got to find a way to make it work?
Yeah, I need 10 seconds.
I didn't know I was going to give you like this big like bomb. Now you're going to go write a blog post right after I'm done. Right?
It goes the whole rest of my day, Mary. It's the whole rest of my day right there doing now. I know
there's so many things that go through your head all of a sudden, right? Like, oh, wait, this is going to change the whole way this happens. But again, we don't know if this is a forever thing or just a one-time aberration.
Yeah. So I... So aspirationally, I agree with where Microsoft wants to go, right? Which is the feature updates are just no big deal and you just push them out. And that's, I don't want to have to do a bunch of planning and a bunch of navel gazing. And I don't want to have to get all uptight about it. I just want it to work. And so my initial reaction is, if it just works, great. I don't care. That sounds like if what you're telling me is more frequently in smaller chunks, we will update the base OS and then you can optionally at your leisure enable new features. I mean, my initial reaction to that is that's great, long as it works.
Right.
If as long as it works and it doesn't take an hour or 2 hours to actually apply and doesn't impact, you know, which is to say it doesn't impact the business and it just works. I'm fine with that. The my sort of thing about the whole cadence of Windows 10 feature updates is just it's a cart and horse situation. Or really, to me, it was a spaceship and pushing a cart, an old buggy, which is to say, you wanted us to move fast, but you didn't build the trust, right? I need to do in place updates or whatever this H2 or I need to do H2 or whatever this thing is like five times and it needs to be a non-event for me and then fine, let's just do it, right? Like then I don't have to worry about it. But we've not been able to string together totally problem free releases,
right?
And put it mildly. Yeah, I mean exactly. So it's like they kind of came out of the gate saying you're going to do this and you know you're going to do it every once twice a year and that's okay as long as it worked without any hassle and I think everyone including Microsoft can agree that didn't happen. And so as long as whatever they're doing now works and doesn't impact the business, it sounds like a great idea, but the proof is in the pudding.
Let's see how it goes, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And what I want to key out specifically is that they're allowing you to not enable these new features. I think that's like, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially in the scenario. If that's to me, it's following something that the Config Manager, again, that's a product I follow very closely, but the Config Manager group has been doing that. They do these releases, these monthly releases, and then three times a year. They will put out a release but they'll have preview features, right? And so you can optionally go enable them. And eventually they might change slightly, but then eventually they get into the bigger product. So I think that would be a smart thing for the Windows 10 product team to grab onto and say, hey, well, we have this cool new feature. Let's get it out there and let's see if some people try it and get some feedback. And then when we actually hit, you know, production, if you will, when we put it into an actual full blown release and force it on people, it's actually been out there and we've had some feedback. And I know they have like internal rings, right? They have the fast and all that stuff. But to get it out into a larger ring.
Yep.
It makes sense.
Beyond release preview. Yeah. Because that's basically how this would work is my understanding is this would give the H2 release extra time to bake because it would already be out in the H1 timeframe for people who wanted to adopt it then. But it would give them 6 months more basically of real world testing before it went out to people who deployed the H2.
Yeah, exactly. And they're doing this kind of the same thing though, which is we shouldn't be learning about this when they release it. And you follow this stuff a little closer, I think, than I do. Like, did we know this was coming? And if we didn't, why? Or when is the release date? See, again, I don't know. When are they actually pushing this out?
Yeah, so we think it's going to be 1909, so September, October time.
Oh, okay. So good. So they are
There is some time.
Good. So they are getting ahead of the ball here.
They are. So I have one last thing I want to close on because this, I know, is another topic near and dear to your patching heart. Servicing stack updates.
Yeah.
He laughs evilly. So I remember you wrote back, I think it was last year, about the whole mess that is servicing stack updates. And I wonder if you could give us a quick breakdown of what these things are and Are things getting better there or no?
Oh, what's the quick rundown? So servicing stack updates, the servicing stack is the thing that updates the operating system. So
it's like
so that's
the updater kind of.
You got it. Yeah. Patcher, patch thyself. That's exactly what a servicing stack update is. And if you go back to, let's say, go back to the Windows 7 world, what that is you have something called the Windows Update Agent, right? So that's the every version of Windows 7 it's a service that's sitting there. It's the Windows Update Agent. And occasionally Microsoft would release an update to the Windows Update Agent, right? So, and people knew this. It was really relatively infrequent. There were a few months where they were clearly trying to squash a bug and they came out with like a new version for like 3 months in a row. But historically speaking of the life cycle of Windows 7, it was somewhat rare. It was something you needed to make sure of or be aware of. And you need to make sure that you are running a recent Windows Update Agent because it solved a bunch of quality problems, but it was really infrequent. Mm-hmm. Servicing stack updates is the Windows 10 equivalent of the Windows Update Agent, or a way of saying is the Windows Update Agent is a subset of the whole servicing stack. And and the servicing stack gets into a whole bunch of things that I'm not even sure I'm fully aware of, but definitely the in-place upgrade, all that stuff is part of it. The servicing stack is what does it. Mm-hmm. And so Microsoft has been releasing new versions of the servicing stack update, and that's probably a good thing, right? In theory, they're fixing these quality parts. They're fixing quality issues with the process of applying updates. What to date still confuses me is why there's so many of them. I do not understand what changed between Windows 7, where it's like, oh, okay, we found a bug in the updating process. And so on some sort of rare, you know, it was a rare event. With Windows 10, I think we can say now pretty officially, it's not a rare event.
Right.
It's something every single month you're going to have to go be like, oh, did they do a servicing stack update or not this month? Mm-hmm. Now, where it really becomes, where it really got interesting, or where I think it really became a problem for organizations, is that that servicing stack updates are not security updates. And so if you look at their release dates, they're kind of whenever. Maybe it's on a C or D week, maybe it's Patch Tuesday, but they aren't really releasing them on, they're not reliably releasing them on Patch Tuesday. And what Microsoft has done a couple of times is, let's say they release a new servicing stack update in the middle of June. It's outside of any normal cycle. They recently in June, and now we get to July updates, and the July update has a prerequisite for the latest servicing stack update. And so updates, the shortest way I can explain it is updates have metadata, and that tells your device, you know, is this update applicable to this device? Is it already installed? And all sorts of kind of things about it. It's the metadata. And then there's the actual update, the content itself. Mm-hmm. And in that, what they're doing is if in July they put in the metadata, hey, we need the servicing stack update from June. We need that installed first before this update, the security update, is applicable. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, and this goes actually back to your first question where we talked about the monthly cycle. If they release something out of band, let's say, right, just whenever they want for the servicing stack update in June, you get to July and you go push out your updates, hopefully you're gonna grab that one. You're gonna grab that servicing stack update. But when you push it out, if it's a prerequisite, your new security updates that got released, well, they're not applicable. They won't even show up as needed until that servicing stack update has been installed. And in the where this is a big problem is on servers. The problem is your device is going to scan and say, okay, what updates are applied or applicable? What updates do I need? And all it's going to pick up is that servicing stack update, and it's going to install that servicing stack update, and it's going to say, and you know, maybe there's some other patches, but it will not pick up July's security update, and it's going to install it, and it's going to say, I'm done. Now, what happens then is the question. And in the config manager space, as it currently stands, because if there's no reboot, if that device doesn't reboot itself, it's never going to go and scan again and say, hey, do I have other updates that need to be installed? Mm-hmm. And on a server where you have a very, you might have a maintenance window of a couple hours, that won't happen. And so you're going to miss patches. And that's the problem with that. That's the big kerfuffle with servicing stack updates, only when they make it a prerequisite. But that has been kind of rare. And that's one thing. So the servicing stack updates themselves are not rare. What really makes it a kerfuffle, something that you actually need to plan around, is when they make the latest cumulative update have a prerequisite, a dependency upon a particular servicing stack update. Then you need to make sure in your organization that you've installed that servicing stack update with enough time so that the device can now pick up that the security update that it depends on is detected as needed and installed in whatever sort of maintenance window, whatever sort of cycle and control that you want.
Okay.
And that's the tricky part, because the servicing stack updates themselves, because they are updating that servicing stack, they tend not to have a filed in use problem, right? They don't need, which means they don't need a reboot. They tend not to require a reboot. So they don't need a reboot, but you might need a reboot, or you need time for the device to say, oh, hey, now this update that previously, you know, the cumulative update, the security update that previously wasn't applied, now it does apply. Mm-hmm. And that's the big kerfuffle. And anyone who wants to take Microsoft to task for doing that, I think is that you have my blessing. Just wait a month. Just give me, I mean, release it in June, that's fine. And make it a prerequisite in August or September.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm. But not close to the date of the patch itself.
That's correct. If you're thinking of a monthly cycle, the biggest problem really comes out is if within a single monthly cycle, they put out a cumulative update that depends on a servicing stack update released in that same cycle. That's the biggest problem. Mm-hmm. Now, there's some debate about, well, these things fix quality problems. So ideally you would install the latest cumulative update before you install the latest servicing stack update to fix whatever quality problem that exists so that your cumulative update has a higher chance of installing. Mm-hmm. And I've only seen that anecdotally. Now, again, I'm not a high paid consultant that talks to hundreds of organizations every week, but I have talked to a lot of people, and I don't know too many people that have had problems installing them not in a particular order when it's not a prerequisite.
That's good. Okay.
And anecdotally, yeah, I've heard a couple of people say, yeah, when we did it in the right order, it seemed to work better. And okay, so that I haven't seen anyone scream about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good to know. Well, we are out of time, unfortunately, but I wanted to say thank you very much for doing this chat, Brian. That was great.
Oh, my pleasure. I can talk for patching for hours.
I know we could go on and on. Maybe one day I'll have you back on if you're game.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Cool. All right. So for all of you regular listeners here, we're going to be back in a couple of weeks with our next guest. So be sure you watch for that. I'll post the information on petri.com, and that will be your signal, listeners, to send in your questions. All you have to do is go to the MJF chat area in the forums on petri.com and submit your questions there. In regard to this chat with Brian, look for the audio and the transcript of it, as with all of our chats, in the next few days. Thank you again.